Good afternoon, everyone. We're going to go ahead and get started with our Rising Star session this afternoon. I'd like to thank you all for being here today. We're delighted to have an excellent panel presenting on their research. Just want to let you know how the session will go. Each presenter, I'm going to introduce them right away, and then they will present one after another. And we will hold question and answer until the end of all presentations. Just a little housekeeping, wanted to let you know that after this session we do have a break, but we will be back in this room at 6:30 for the awards. And actually one of our panelists here is receiving the Post Professional Jong Award, so we're very fortunate to be hearing from her today. We're back here at 6:30, and then the dinner for the oral health section will be held beginning at 8:15, just down the hallway on the first floor in W196C. If you would like to attend and have not yet registered, please see Kathy Latore. I think we do have a couple of seats that are still available. Also, I'd like to do a plug for our fluoride things that we're selling here to support fluoride and for advocacy. We do have shirts available for purchase. Short sleeve shirts are $20. Long sleeve shirts are $25, and hoodies are $30. We also have water bottles so that you can fill it with tap water and drink it. And those are available, I believe, for $10. So I'd like to go ahead now and introduce, in order of presentation, our panelists. The first is Ashta Singhal. She is an assistant professor in health policy and health services research at Boston University School of Dental Medicine. She received her dental degree from Manipal University, an MPH from University of Albany, and completed her dental public health residency with NIDCR, NIH. And also recently finished her PhD at the University of Iowa. She's board certified in dental public health. And her research interests include health policy analysis and health services research as it relates to the oral health of vulnerable populations. She is also our Post Professional Award winner, so we're delighted to hear from her today. And she will be receiving her award at the 6:30 session. So we hope that you'll be able to join us for that. Our second speaker is Adiam Mengas, and she is an MPH student at Touro University in California. She also holds a JD and was the recipient in 2006 of the UN UNITAR Fellowship Program in Public International Law at the International Court of Justice in Hague, Netherlands. She's lived in three continents, Africa, West Europe, and North America, and has had a lot of life experience. Her public health courses really impassioned her and really demonstrated to her that she was on the right path working in public health. And she's very committed to social justice, so we're delighted to have her with us today. Our third presenter is Jenna Gold, who is an associate professor of dental public health, master's of public health with a dental emphasis at A.T. Stills, also adjunct associate at University of Florida College of Dentistry. She received a DDS and PhD degree from University of Oulu, Finland, and a master's of public health from University of Florida. Our last presenter today is Julie Barrett Abibi, and she is a PhD candidate at the Simon School of Social Work, where she also holds an adjunct faculty appointment. And she also has adjunct appointments at Smith College and Elms College. In 2014, Julie was awarded with the American Cancer Society doctoral training grant to advance her research interests in evidence-based oncology practice and intervention development. Her research interest is driven by her clinical experience in oncology and social work in elder care, home care settings. I'm delighted to moderate this session today. Each of these panelists represent the future of dental public health and research, and so it is an honor to sit with them and share the table with them today. Without further ado, I'd like to hand it over to Ashta.
Thank you so much, Hannah. Hi, I'm Ashta Singhal, and today I'll be talking about one of my dissertation projects, where we examine the impact of California's elimination of Medicaid adult dental coverage on emergency department use for dental problems. Dr. Bob Eisman is here in the audience, who was one of my team members and co-authors on this paper, so thank you so much. Emergency department visits for dental problems has received a lot of attention recently in the past, I would say, 5 to 10 years, And that is both in the scientific literature, there are a lot of studies published on it, as well as in the popular media. And the reason behind that is that emergency department visits for dental problems are on an increase. They've almost doubled over the past decade. And so this is a really important issue. Also, emergency departments are called as the safety net of the safety net. When we think about ED visits, we think of actual medical emergencies. But unfortunately, emergency departments also treat a lot of conditions that could be better treated in a primary care setting, including dental problems. So a little bit of background about the Medicaid program. Medicaid is the healthcare coverage program for the low-income populations, primarily the children and their parents, but now with the Affordable Care Act, it's including more and more low-income adults. The Medicaid program for children does provide dental coverage under the EPSDT program. However, for adults, dental benefits are optional. And what that means is every state can decide whether they want to cover any dental services for adults, and if they do cover it, which services would that be? This leads to a lot of variation all across the US in what states cover, and also over time, a lot of states go back and forth on what they cover for adult in terms of their dental benefits. What happened in California was they used to provide a fairly comprehensive full dental coverage package for their low-income adult population. But in July of 2009, due to budget crisis and fiscal deficits that were faced across the nation actually, California had to eliminate all of their Medicaid adult dental benefits, except a few services that are federally required services for pregnant women and nursing home residents. So the majority of the low-income adults covered by the Medicaid program, which was more than 3.2 million people, actually faced this cuts in dental benefits. So our objective was to examine how this policy change affected emergency department use for dental problems by these low-income adults who were covered by Medicaid. We also wanted to see if this policy had a uniform impact on those people, or did it differ by their race, ethnicity, or where they lived and their age groups. Finally, we wanted to compare the costs that the Medicaid program saved by eliminating the Medicaid adult dental coverage and compare that with the increase in costs with the ED visits for dental problems. One thing that I want to clarify here is that by eliminating adult dental services, California Medicaid was no longer reimbursing dentists for their services. However, if these adults showed up in the emergency department with a dental problem, those costs are still borne by the Medicaid program. So this is not a new problem, given that it's an optional benefit. Several states in the past have seen a similar policy change. Whenever there's a fiscal deficit or crisis, adult dental benefits for Medicaid is the first one to be chopped off. And as you can see, there are studies from several states, including Maryland, Massachusetts, and Oregon, and a preliminary study from California. And basically what they all found was after the dental benefits are cut, ED visits increase, unmet dental need amongst these low-income people increase, and dental visits to dentists, of course, decreases. There was one study that looked at multiple states, and it estimated that Medicaid adult dental coverage increases the probability of dental visit by 16 to 22%. However, there is a flaw in some of these studies, which used what is called as a pre-post aggregate comparison. So let's just look at this example. Suppose we have the dental ED visit rate on the y-axis and just time on x-axis. And we know that nationally, ED visits for dental problems are going up, so it would look something like that. However, what most of these studies did was that they clubbed the period, the data, into two time periods, so pre-policy change and post-policy change, and took the average ED visit rate for those two periods and compared just those two values. Now here, if we look at that example, it is possible that if we see the rate in the post period, which is this one, and compare it with the pre-period, it is possible that after we do the statistical analysis, we can find that it was actually statistically higher in the post-policy change period than the pre-policy change period. But if we focus over here, which is when the policy change occurred, we can see that really there is nothing dramatic happening over here. The slope was increasing throughout the time period, by just clubbing those into those two time periods, we can get wrong conclusions. And so what we proposed in our study was to use a quasi-experimental study approach, which is called the interrupted time series analysis. This is a fairly strong quasi-experimental approach, which is used even by Cochrane in addition to the randomized control trials. So there are very few non-randomized control trials that the Cochrane group would include in their study and reviews, but this is one of those. And what happens in an interrupted time series analysis is that we have a series of observations rather than one observation, which is interrupted by the intervention. The intervention could be a policy, as in our case, or it could be a health education program or any kind of intervention that you're interested in looking at. And then we compare this to another set of series of observations for a comparison group. Okay, this would become more clearer when we look at this particular study. We use data from the state emergency department databases that are made available by AHRQ, the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality. And we also got some of the aggregated Medicaid enrollment data from the state of California. We examined the rate of ED visits over a six-year time period, and we calculated monthly observations. So we ended up with 72 monthly observations over 6 years, of which 42 were before the policy change occurred, so until July 2009, and then 30 observations after the policy change. Our primary outcome was number of dental ED visits per 100,000 enrollees. And for comparison, we looked at rates of ED visits for other conditions as well, such as asthma, back pain, diabetes, headache, and abdominal pain, all of which are fairly common amongst low-income adult population, but we expect that these ED visits will not be affected by the dental policy change. We used segmented regression analysis for the statistical part of this, which is very similar to a linear regression analysis, except that we allow the slope and the intercept to change at the point when the policy change occurred. We also took into account other analytic considerations which come with a time series data, such as autocorrelation, seasonal effects, structural break, and lag time. And we tested for those different considerations, and if they were present, we appropriately accounted for those. So let's talk about what we found. We found that over the 6 years that we examined, we found 113,000 Medicaid adults visited the ED for dental problems, and these are all non-traumatic dental problems, and for a total of 122,000 visits. So some people went back multiple times, that's why we have more visits than the number of people. Now, if we were to use the methodology that other studies have used and calculate an average pre- and post-rate, we found a 32% increase in the ED visit rate for dental problems. However, when we use the segmented regression analysis, this is what we found. So in the table over there, we have the baseline intercept, which is this value. We have the baseline slope, which is the slope of this line. Then we have the change in intercept, which is this jump here, and then the change in slope. So when we are examining the impact of the policy, we are really interested in change in intercept and the change in slope when the policy change occurred. And so with dental ED visits, we found that actually the change in intercept was statistically significant, and that is this jump that you see over here. The slope, as you can see, stayed fairly the same, but there was an immediate impact. So if we see a change in intercept, that signifies the immediate impact of the policy, and then gradual impact, like it sustained over the study period, but the slope did not increase. We, as I said, we examined other conditions as well, including asthma, diabetes, headache, abdominal pain, and back pain. And here I have presented only the change in intercept and change in slope, which is what we are interested in. And like we saw in the previous slide, the change in intercept for dental ED visits was statistically significant. Whereas for almost all of the other conditions except back pain, we found a significantly declining slope for other ambulatory care sensitive conditions. So at a time when other ED visits for primary care preventable conditions was declining in California, we found that the ED visits for dental problems were actually increasing. So we concluded that the number of dental ED visits per 100,000 enrollees increased immediately and significantly after the policy changed. And as I don't know if you saw that the change in intercept was 4.4, but that was 4.4 visits per 100,000 enrollees per month. If we aggregate it to a yearly number and taking into account the 3.2 million low-income adults that are enrolled by Medicaid, the policy change accounted for 1,800 ED visits related to dental problems every year. So then we were interested in seeing, was this a uniform impact or did it affect certain groups more than others? So we classified our Medicaid adult population by age. So we have the youngest group 21 to 35, 36 to 45, 46 to 64 and 65 and older. And we found that the youngest age group had a statistically significant increase in the intercept, but actually none of the other age groups had any statistically significant impact of the policy. So we found that only the youngest adults are the ones that were most impacted by the change in policy, whereas other age groups were not impacted as much, especially as indicated by the statistical significance. Similarly, we grouped our population by their race ethnicity into non-Hispanic whites, non-Hispanic blacks, Hispanics, and non-Hispanic others. And if we start with whites, we found a statistically significant increase in the intercept. But if you follow the slope, we see that although they did have an immediate impact, that impact wasn't really sustained because the slope sort of went down, even further down than what the rate would have been without the policy change. Okay, so the dotted line here represents what the slope would be if there was no policy change. For non-Hispanic blacks and Hispanics, we found a statistically significant increase in the intercept, but as you can see, the slopes never went down. So they had an immediate impact of the policy, which was actually sustained at least throughout our study period. For non-Hispanic others, our N was really small, and so there was a lot of variability. We did not find any statistically significant results. So we concluded that actually all whites, blacks, and Hispanics had a significant impact of the policy, but whites did have that impact to a lesser extent compared to the other groups. Finally, we grouped them based on the degree of rurality of where these residents lived into large metropolitan areas, which had more than a million residents, medium or small metropolitan areas, micropolitan areas, and non-core areas. And if we start with the first one, here we found a statistically significant increase in both the intercept as well as the slope. So there was an immediate increase in number of ED visits for dental problems, as well as over time that slope kept going up. So there was an immediate as well as a prolonged impact of the policy. With medium and small metropolitan areas, ED visits were actually declining before the policy change, as you can see the negative slope here. And after the policy change, the slope changed its direction. So they did have a very significant impact as well. For micropolitan areas, we again saw that the slope became less negative, so an increase in ED visits. For non-core areas, this was a surprising finding. We actually found a statistically significant decline in the rate of ED visits. However, when we looked at our population, less than 3% of all dental ED visits that were made in the state were residents of non-core areas. So we really advise caution when concluding from those last set of results. So we concluded that those who were living in the large metropolitan areas were most significantly impacted by this policy change. So in overall conclusion, the Medicaid adult dental policy change did not have a uniform effect. The younger adults, the racial ethnic minorities, and those who live in metropolitan areas were affected to a greater extent compared to their counterparts. And in the end, we did some very basic cost analysis, just cost comparisons. So here we have in the red color the claims that were paid by Medicaid for dental services. So as you can see, this dotted line is the policy, is the policy change. And as we would expect, the dental claims fell when the policy stopped reimbursing for dental services. And the blue line here represents the claims that were reimbursed for ED visits for dental problems. And we can see that as the policy changed, the claims went up. However, these are both on different scales. So as you can see, the red ones corresponds to millions of dollars, whereas the blue ones is $100,000. So Medicaid did end up saving money, about $250 million. So it's a lot of, so we cannot really make a cost saving argument. But if we take into account other things that were not measured, like inpatient hospitalizations for dental problem, the impact of poor dental conditions on their quality of life. Also, many of us know that emergency department visits don't really lead to the resolution of a dental problem. So these are really, this money is down the drain because they're paying for these ED visits while they're not getting any benefit out of it. So the study, I think, has strong implications because this is one of the better designed studies which provides evidence that eliminating dental coverage leads to an increase in ED visits for dental problems. We know that it is associated with substantial costs and quality of life implications. And it really urges for a paradigm shift, especially on the part of policymakers, to not think of it as a cost savings opportunity, but more as cost effectiveness and take into account the unmeasured pain and suffering that is often associated with untreated dental disease. Currently with the ACA, we have a unique opportunity because the population that is affected by Medicaid adult dental policy is expanding nationally, especially in states that are doing the Medicaid expansion. And federal government is basically covering almost all the costs associated in the near future. So since this study was conducted and published, California has reinstated many of the adult dental benefits and also expanded their Medicaid program. So with that, I thank you all for being here. That's my contact information if you have any questions, and I look forward to the discussion. Thank you.
Thank you.